You're listening to EPN, the ePodcast Network.
Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network, your channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and some of the world's top executives who share business strategies and insights that can all help you build your business, leading to your business success. And now, broadcasting from anywhere between Brazil, South America to Los Angeles, California, it is your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Today, we're speaking with Dr. David Linehan, a medical school dean and health technology entrepreneur. He currently serves as the CEO of Tiber Health, the technology company that is focused on innovating medical school education and helping to solve the global physician shortage. Dr. Linehan, a pleasure to have you with us today on Enterprise Radio.
Thanks, Eric. I'm really excited to be on.
And we're certainly pleased to have you with us today, and thanks for your time. So according to the American Association of Medical Colleges, an increasingly diverse population in the U.S. is seeing its medical needs met by an overwhelmingly white pool of doctors. Where in the country is this most prevalent, and how does this create difficulties with facilities that are trying to provide adequate medical care for patients?
This is one of the big things that I'm really interested in. It's kind of the vision statement of being an entrepreneur. How do we go about solving a problem? That's what entrepreneurs do. And this vision is there's a lack of diversity in our healthcare delivery markets. And in the Midwest of the United States, this problem is especially prevalent. We're over 95% of the doctors that are practicing from West Virginia to Colorado are Caucasian. And they kind of look like me, but about 30% of the population doesn't. And that cultural competency impacts the quality of care that we're able to deliver. Being able to connect with a patient becomes very important in patient satisfaction, patient outcomes, and also reimbursement rates. So there's a monetary element to this also, that the better we can help our patients, the more patients we can see, the more that we can improve our health systems. And really, this is a striking number to me. The UCLA did this study in 2016 to assess the number of Hispanic physicians in the United States over the last 30 years. And while the population, the Hispanic population in the United States, has increased dramatically, the actual number of Hispanic physicians has declined. And just being able to communicate with a patient is so important. Think about the last time you went to your doctor and he gives you some medicine and he says, take this once a day. In Spanish, once, when you write it out, means 11. Just understanding a little difference like that can be the difference between how well a patient responds to the medicine. So our vision and what we're trying to do in creating this technology company is figure out a way that we can go about delivering the medical education in a different way so that we can concentrate on adapting our curriculum and our education models to a global standard that concentrates on this cultural competency. And that's really kind of the important thing of what we're trying to do. And in the Midwest, as I said, this is a significant problem that we need to address today. We can't wait.
And you're right about that. Now, along with the need for diversity among physicians, another topic that you're passionate about is the current model for medical school education. Why is this an area of concern, and how does it impact the healthcare industry looking ahead?
How we go about delivering the curriculum, how do we take this vision and we change the way we deliver the curriculum, or how we change these? This is kind of the direction that we're taking. And when we look at medical education, there's been three periods in medical education. There was this period way back when, like 3,000 years ago, if you wanted to be a doctor, you went to some Greek island and studied with Hippocrates. And you would learn diagnosis and things like that. About 1,000 years later comes this guy named Galen. You've probably never heard of Galen, but you see him around in society. Sometimes pharmacy shops are called Galen. He was this doctor that did all these types of writing. He did all this research, and he wrote. And from when Galen was alive, that was about zero, the time around zero, he did all this writing, and so medicine was a dead topic. Everyone thought medicine from zero to about 1600 was all done. Galen had done all the research. It was a done topic. You know, if you wanted your kid to be a doctor, you didn't want him to be a doctor back then. You wanted him to do law or something like that because medicine was a done science. A guy comes around named Vesalius in about the 1600s. I know these are kind of weird names, but Vesalius realized that Galen was wrong. And so he would stand in front of the class and he would lecture to the students and describe what Galen did in research and why it was wrong. That's how we're teaching medicine right now. We're teaching medicine the same way from the 1600s. We think about when you went to class. You went to class, the professor stands in front of the room and lectures, and you take some notes. And in medicine, you take lots and lots and lots of notes. And then at the end, you take some exam, and then you get a grade and you move on to the next year. We have to develop a system that's a lot better in how we continually assess students, literally minute to minute, as they work through this curriculum. And what it allows you to do is it allows you, in our curriculum, because we teach the students in a different way, we're able to collect all types of data. When they're in the classroom, we're collecting data. And by collecting all this data, it allows us to change our admission standards, because we're able to take students that are deemed high risk and bring them into our curriculum. And this is really the direction and the innovation of the technology that we're creating, is how we go about using all this data to let us get more students into medical school. Think about when you went to the doctor. You never asked the doctor what grade they got in biochemistry. You don't ask your doctor what grade they got in pathology or anatomy. You want to know that they're a competent doctor. What we want to do is start selecting students who aren't necessarily the best at taking an exam. We want to take students who are the best at treating the patients. And the data allows us to start moving away from only taking students who are good at tests and start focusing on the skill sets that are needed to be, in my opinion, a good doctor. Being able to interact with the patients, connecting, getting the patient to understand what's the matter with them and follow your direction. Those are really all the important things that we need. And if you can start taking more diverse students in your population, as in medical students, they're the ones that are likely to go back and practice into their community. We have whole communities across the United States that don't have doctors. And a lot of times these communities are poorer communities. If we can get students from those areas into our medical school. And I also believe this, that talent, the ability to become a good doctor, that talent is evenly distributed across the globe. So we got to figure out a way to use the analytics to identify who those students are, because they're the ones that are going to go back into the communities and provide the care. And that's really the advantage of our technology and what we're trying to create.
Now, Dr. Linehan, I also understand that you've implemented a technology-enabled curriculum at Ponce Health Sciences University that aims to address these two challenges. Number one, increasing the diversity of medical providers, and number two, upgrading traditional medical school practices to produce better prepared doctors. How can technology be a solution for these two goals?
Yeah, this is really the important thing. This is the fourth period in medical education. I talked about the first three, the Hippocrates, the Galen, the Vesalius. We're now in the fourth period, and the person who can solve this is the person that they're going to write about in the next 1,000 years. Because being able to use technology, what we have today, is really, really important. Now, I want you to imagine you're a medical student just even 5-10 years ago. You walk into class, you have all your books. You sit down in class. I had biochemistry at 8 in the morning. Biochemistry is kind of that tough class in medical school. I can't function at 8 in the morning. I'm not really a morning person. What we do is so different. Our system is, imagine this. You walk into class the first day. We hand you an iPad. That device has all your exams on it. It has all your lectures on it. It has all your books on it. It has everything you're going to need to do for that year in medical school. We have the students, they don't listen to lectures in the traditional sense. We have them watch the lectures from high quality professors from around the globe, watch these lectures offline. They get asked questions as they work through these lectures. This is not an online program, this is a hybrid. So they watch those lectures, and then they come into the classroom And in the classroom, we work through problems, clinical problems, cultural competency problems, based on the information that they watched in this lecture. We get the students to work in teams. So we put a question up on the screen. The students answer it. We kind of assess that data. So we're getting all types of data coming in when they're answering the questions. We have them work in teams to solve that problem. What would they do? How do you react? How do you interact with the patient? And then we ask them the question again. And each time we're getting data as we're feeding through. The important thing that we got here is that a lot of times in class, you work by yourself. In this model, you watch the lectures offline, and then you come in the class and work in teams to solve these problems. And that really is the important part to this type of new technology in the curriculum. It's not that lots of people have given, you know, classrooms online or offline. It's being able to use that, get the students to work in teams, and then collect that data in real time as it's coming in. That's our technology. The data is coming in real time, and we're able to adapt the classroom. The questions the professor asks in that classroom is adapted to how the students understand that material. I can tell you from a teacher perspective, this is a significantly better way to teach. It's more fun. I'm teaching the students the stuff that they know, or excuse me, the stuff that they don't know, instead of teaching them the stuff that they already know. And so it creates a much more exciting classroom experience. So we have three parts to it. We have the videos that we create, the students watch, we have our exams and our assessments that we give in a group environment, and then we have our large-scale data analytics. That whole package is what we call the dynamic classroom or our dynamic curriculum. And that's our technology and how we're going about delivering it to our medical students.
And this is truly awesome. I got to tell you, today we're joined by Dr. David Linehan, the CEO of Tiber Health, a technology company that is focused on innovating medical school education and helping to solve the global physician shortage, here on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Now, also, what kind of results have you achieved at Ponce using this methodology?
So what we've been able to do is take all this data in our dynamic curriculum and be able to change our admissions requirements. So we're able to select students who have a propensity to go work in these areas that need physicians. We're able to increase our diversity in our population pool. And we're taking students that a lot of medical schools won't take. Maybe they didn't get a very good grade in calculus when they were an undergraduate or something like that. We have different metrics because we have so much data coming in. And the things that we've been able to do is we've been able to improve our board scores. When we took over kind of implementing this process into the curriculum, we were one of the bottom tier schools in our passage rates, probably the bottom 10%. And now we're at mid-table. And I know you think, oh, that's just mid-table. But I'm taking students that a lot of these other schools aren't taking. It's not that they're not going to be great doctors. They're just maybe not the best test takers. Our doctors are the ones that are going to become leaders into the hospital systems and the communities because they have that cultural competency skill set, which I believe is more important. So we've been able to improve our board score passage rates to where we're competitive with any medical school in the United States. And, you know, that's really the key thing to it is how do we ensure that our doctors make it through the curriculum and are able to go out and practice in these communities? And that's the important part of what we're able to do.
Now, can the strategy that you're implementing at Ponce deliver benefits for medical schools that are based in the U.S. as well as medical schools in other parts of the world?
Yeah, that's really, to me, the exciting thing. And when I talked about being the person they write about in a thousand years, if we can standardize the medical curriculum across the globe where students are using it the same thing and being assessed continuously together, one, our analytics become much more significant in their accuracy, and two, we're able to deliver the U.S. curriculum, this gold standard around the world of how we go about providing medical education to areas of the world where they just don't have the resources to do it. To give an example, we built a medical school in Texas, the Dell Medical School. Beautiful. I mean, I've been down there. It's a great campus, but it costs $600 million. In the U.S., we can afford that. I mean, we have the resources to do that. But if you're in Somalia or if you're in Ethiopia, you cannot afford that type of capital to develop a new system, a new way of educating students. Our model allows us to drive these costs down. I mean, to the removing zeros off the cost and be able to give students across the globe a standardized curriculum of superior quality. And I believe the LCME is the superior level. That's the accreditation body that kind of approves the curriculum. We can now deliver this in a global world at cost where people can actually afford it. And here's why this is important. We talked about the cultural competency part being important to health systems. I have a medical school. I don't have one, but we want to open one in Africa. And let's say we have one in Somalia. And we know we have a large Somali population sitting in Minnesota, Minneapolis. I can go to that health system and say, I have three doctors that are practicing in Somalia. Because of our large analytic model, we're able to identify that they're going to do very well on the U.S. boards and they're going to be able to come here and practice. We can help you place them into your health system. Now, that health system gets culturally competent doctors who understand the culture of the patients that are coming into their hospitals and their medical clinics to be treated. That is going to improve patient satisfaction. Improving patient satisfaction improves patient outcomes, and improving patient satisfaction and outcomes improves patient reimbursement from Medicare and Medicaid. So you get a win-win-win population. You're providing an education at cost where people can afford it globally. You're able to identify the students who are going to be able to go work in different parts of the world, and you're able to tell our health systems, hey, we can help you with doctors who understand your patients better. And I'll give you a good example of this, and it's a personal example, but I think it's important. I had a heart attack 6 months ago. I had to have heart surgery. And the doctor walks into the room to tell my wife and me that something happens, right? So the doctor walks in, and in the room is just my wife and me. The doctor doesn't touch me. He doesn't really do an exam like where he's touching my arm or hugs me or anything. I'm an Irish Catholic boy from the Midwest. Unless you absolutely have to, I don't want you touching me. That's kind of my culture. But when I'm in Puerto Rico or I'm in South America and you're treating a patient with the same physiology, the patient had the exact same thing happen to them, you hug the patient. You touch them. You communicate with the grandmother, because when the doctor walks in the room, there's 30 people in the room. Now, medically, what you do is exactly the same. Are you going to do a central line? How you're going to treat the patients exactly the same. That's why we can standardize the curriculum across the globe. Teaching the student how to handle that cultural aspect. Do you hug the patient? Do you touch their arm? Who do you talk to in the room? Those little things are just as important in getting the patient to comply with what you want them to do, to follow through so you can improve that patient's health. That little aspect becomes very significant. And that's what we're able to do globally with our curriculum, with our technology. And again, it's part of the vision. The vision is that we want to improve healthcare for everybody. This is the way you go about delivering it.
And that certainly is quite a vision, and we can't thank you enough for what you're doing to help solve the global physician shortage. Lastly, how does the approach that's in place at Ponce address another crucial obstacle, which is the growing shortfall of doctors across the U.S.?
You know, it's kind of amazing that we have a shortfall. This one always kind of gets me a little bit confused. We have all the money, you know, to build these medical schools and to train our doctors, but yet we don't seem to be training enough. And everyone knows this. We all know that we're short doctors. We've all called the doctor and wanted to make an appointment. They say, you will come back in 3 months. We can schedule 3 months from today. So we're all aware of it, but the solution really seems to be eluding us. And so we need to find a way to go about improving the number of healthcare workers across the globe. So this isn't just the U.S. problem. This is a global problem. In the U.S., we're about 120,000 doctors short. Doctors are retiring just about as fast as we can produce them. Across the globe, it's like 13 million healthcare workers short. And the number one killer of women and children in South America is just lack of access to a healthcare worker. I mean, staggering stats. So we need to solve this problem today. I mean, we can't wait any longer. The population's growing on the planet. We need to find a way that we can help improve and build medical schools and train people to the standards we need now. And so that's really what this curriculum allows us to do. It allows us to standardize the education across the globe and keep the cost down to where people can actually afford it. And, you know, the cost is a big deal. It took me 20 years to pay off my loan. We can't be asking the next generation to go into debt to get these type of degrees, because we need them working in communities where there might not be the reimbursement to be able to pay off your student loans. And that's the key. How do we go about delivering a curriculum across the globe, standardizing it at a cost people can afford, to a quality that everyone understands is top quality, a high standard, and get these people out? I hope we can make an impact on this across the world. That's my vision. But I also recognize that this is a problem that's gonna probably be here in the next century. My goal is to just make sure that it's a little bit better than it is today.
Again, Dr. Linehan, you've got quite a vision, and we can't thank you enough for taking the time to share it with our audience here on Enterprise Radio. Where can listeners get all the details on Tiber Health and be in touch accordingly?
That's a great question. So if they go to our website, it's tiberhealth.com, T-I-B-E-R, Tiber, just for a little history lesson, is the river that the god of medicine was born in. So it's in Italy. It's a real river, and it's called Tiber. So it's tiberhealth.com, and that explains what we're trying to do and some of our innovative models and how we've gone about utilizing this. And the neat thing is this isn't something that we're dreaming about. This is something that's been created, and we are now implementing. And you can see how we're going about implementing it and making an impact across the globe right now.
Again, Dr. Linehan, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio. All the best, and thanks again for your time.
Thanks, Eric. Really appreciate it.
We've been speaking with Dr. David Linehan, the CEO of Tiber Health, a technology company that is focused on innovating medical school education and helping to solve the global physician shortage. And for further details, simply visit TiberHealth.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks again for listening to Enterprise Radio here on the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. To subscribe for future programming, simply visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.